Did you have big plans to read more books when lockdown started? Find yourself falling into a pattern, though, of one more episode instead? Well, you're not alone. If that pile of books is towering, maybe it's time to launch back into them. Well, tonight we're kicking off the Night Life Book Club to get our heads stuck back into the pages. We'll be chatting about Amanda Laurie's new novel, The Labyrinth. But first, I want to introduce our readers. Sean Guy, hello up there in Darwin. Hello, Sean.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Lovely to have you join us on Night Live. Now, Sean's a writer as well as a reader and a bookshop manager up in Darwin. His books that he's written fall into the urban fantasy category. So, Sean, explain, what is urban fantasy?
Yeah, I feel like a bit of a triple threat with the writer, the reader, and the bookseller. It's just I'm sort of surrounded by books, aren't I? So my books, yeah, urban fantasy, I guess it's all those traditional elements of fantasy. You know, some urban fantasies, like Harry Potter, you know, have wizards, others have dragons and vampires, But the thing they have in common is that they're in that urban setting. So the modern day, usually, you know, perhaps in New York or another city that we recognise, just interacting with technology in a way that you don't get from traditional fantasy.
And yeah. Who are your favourite authors at the moment, Sean?
Oh, I'm obsessed with Neil Gaiman, of course. I wish he was writing more. But I'm also reading Jasper Ford. Joe Abercrombie's new book comes out quite soon, so yeah. I'm very excited about that.
We chatted about Jasper Ford's Constant Rabbit a couple of weeks ago. I absolutely adored it. I love his stuff.
Yeah, I just can't stop laughing. I mean, I've never missed one of his books.
Yeah, he's so funny. Well, thank you for joining us for our Night Live Book Club. And at the other end of the country, on the heart-shaped aisle, is Rachel Edwards, a features writer for ABC Hobart, and in her other lives, a publisher at Transportation Press, former editor of Island magazine, and a longtime bookseller over 3 states and 20 years. Welcome to Night Live, Rachel.
Indira, hello. And hello, Sean.
Hi.
From opposite ends of the continent. So, listeners, if you have read Amanda Laurie's Labyrinth, I'd love to hear from you. Dive in, give us a call, 1300 800 222, 1300 800 222. And also, you know, give us a suggestion of what title we should consider for our Nightlife Book Club. We'd love to hear those ideas as well, 1300 800 222. Now to tonight's first book. Sean and Rachel battled it out to choose a title for our inaugural book club. Now, it was Rachel's choice, Amanda Laurie. And now, while this novel is set in Sydney, Amanda is Tasmanian, like Rachel. So Sean was maybe a little concerned, I think, that it was ladies' fiction. So I want to know, Sean and Rachel, why this book? Why did you decide on this book?
I don't know if the term I used was ladies' fiction. I don't know if I would ever say it quite like that.
But that was my summary.
Coin toss here.
Look, and I think, like, I kind of push for this one. I've read a couple of Amanda Laurie's other books, and I also, you know, I might have a parochial tendency, I don't know, but I'm always very keen to read new writing that's coming out of Tasmania. And I think Amanda Laurie, a lot of people will say, you know, who's this woman? You might have heard of, you know, Richard Flanagan coming from Tasmania, and possibly, you know, Robbie Arnott with his Flames. But not many people know about Amanda, and she won the Patrick White Prize, which is a prize that's awarded to writers that are overlooked. I mean, I'm sure there's a nicer way that prize is described. But I was keen to read it, so I did push for it, I admit.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about what it's about, Sean, if I can get you to start.
Yeah, I suppose it's about a woman who is a mother but also a daughter, of course, and it's sort of about her relationships and coming to terms with them, both in terms of the mother that left her and then what kind of happens to her son. I'm not sure how we're allowed to go with spoilers on this show. Can I give it away? I suppose not.
Not give it away completely, but just give us a little idea without giving too much of, yeah, the main punchline away from the book, if you can. I know it can be difficult.
No, certainly, yes. So I guess what she has this memory from her childhood of walking this kind of labyrinth around the insane asylum that her father used to run or used to be part of as a doctor. And I guess she gets it into her mind that she can't overcome all everything that's happened to her since without re-walking that labyrinth. But when she tries to find it, it's not there. So then she goes on this journey to recreate it. That's kind of what I got from it, at least.
Okay.
And there's another... Well, yeah, I think that's really interesting because there's kind of a profound layer that goes over that. So she's obsessed with this labyrinth, and that's shot through the whole book. But she's also just moved to a coastal town a long way away from Sydney, where she's spent her life. And she's moved there because her son is in the prison that is nearby. So she's moved to be near her son. And it's revealed that he was a painter. He was obsessed with a woman. And this is just a backstory, which is interesting because it's such a huge fundamental thing for a woman to have happened to her in her life. Her son is in prison. But he was obsessed with a woman, and he painted and painted her. He was an artist. And then the woman rejected him. He burnt the paintings, but he also burnt the building that the paintings were in, and he killed people as a result of that. So there's all of this, these notions of art and obsession and this profound relationship that's happening between the mother and the son who's in prison. So that's the backstory.
And Rachel,
yeah, I suppose I just didn't find it quite as profound. In I enjoyed it, but yeah, the journey felt a bit like a labyrinth itself. You're just kind of wandering the corridors, waiting to find out what happened.
Right, so it didn't seem to get to the point for you, Sean.
Yeah. Look, like I suppose not. I was just kind of wondering when I would get to the centre of the labyrinth and meet the Minotaur, and I'm not sure that we did.
But you liked it, Rachel.
Look, I really did. I mean, I've got some criticisms. I will not hold back. But I did. Like, it's... like Sean's saying, we are kind of... I suppose the movement in the narrative is her thinking about building the narrative, so there really is not a lot of movement. There's no grand dramatic arc. It's a woman in a coastal town with a few relationships, got a weird guy, Ray, who lives up above her, who refuses to wave at her when she goes past, and, the local woman, Diane, who goes out kayaking every morning. So it's a fairly small, they're living these kind of small lives, and the only thing that propels it is her thinking about building the labyrinth and then beginning to take a few steps towards that.
Now, so this whole concept of building a labyrinth. Now, Sean, can you explain to me what the difference is between a labyrinth and a maze?
Yeah, I have to say that was one of my favourite parts of the book, actually, this idea of the difference between the mythos of the maze and of the labyrinth. So I guess the way that Amanda described it was a maze is kind of something you have to try and get out of. So it's the sort of thing that you see as a kid, when you've got an entrance and an exit and all these winding corridors and dead ends. And so it's all about where you are, but also trying to get out of there. Whereas the labyrinth is more a single path, like a journey, I suppose, where it's not about where you are physically, but what you're trying to uncover at the centre of the labyrinth and what you're trying to learn about yourself, perhaps. So it's more of an internal journey, even though there is a set path.
Right, okay. And, Rachel, this was another point that you made, that it's a Jungian notion and concept that you can cure your ills by building something. So, and this is the central idea around this book, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it really is, and it comes, it's set up really early in the book as well, as she goes back to the asylum that she grew up in, where her father was, kind of the quartermaster in some ways of this place. And the quote at the beginning of the book says, "The cure for many ills," noted Jung, "is to build something." So it is about her healing as well, this journey to kind of heal something, and it's revealed that she's trying to heal because her son has done this terrible, terrible thing.
Did that work?
I quite like
sure?
the idea of yep. that, because it's the same as that other age-old saying about, idle hands, and the devil's work and all that. I quite like that. But I think one of my frustrations with the book was that her building the labyrinth seemed to have a really positive effect on people around her, but I'm not sure that it actually did that much for the main character, Erica.
I disagree, because I feel like we do go through a journey with her, and, you know, again, without too many spoilers, there is a contentment that grows about her. Like, she settles into this really shacky shack, you know, in this whoop-whoop coastal town, and, you know, there's abrasive relationships that begin with the neighbours, like this Ray fella, but then she makes friends, you know, and then, you know, she's pushed a lot of her remaining family, which is her brother, away, but her nephew comes to visit. So there's this kind of slow thawing that seems to happen for her mind and her heart. And they talk about the labyrinth as a journey to the heart as well, which I thought was quite lovely. You know, and I was reminded, I have to say, this idea of, you know, idle hands, or too much time on the hands and doing something to distract you. It reminded me of when we were little and in front of the television, Mum would always make us iron or do something. We weren't allowed to just watch television. But then I don't want to get too woo-woo or anything, but I started to think about how, you know, if you've got a problem, is this Jungian idea just to distract you from the problem, or is it to give you kind of a tool to move through the problem without having to be too obsessed about it, without, you know, ruminating on it too much?
Mm. We're starting a nightlife book club tonight, and tonight we're talking, our first book, first cab off the ranks, is Labyrinth, the Amanda Laurie book. And our two book readers are Sean Guy, joining us from Darwin, and Rachel Edwards from Hobart. Sean, the other thing that was, you know, Erica is the main protagonist in this book. What are some of the other characters that get drawn in? Did you connect with them?
Yeah, I loved the side characters. I suspect much more than I liked Erica herself. there's this stonemason named Jerko, I think I'm pronouncing that right, but he's kind of this mysterious immigrant character who we're not sure if he's outstayed his visa or if he ever had one. I think it is revealed towards the end that he just kind of, I won't give it away, but he sort of comes into the picture quite suddenly and with all these amazing opinions about what she should and shouldn't do. And one of his great lines about the labyrinth is Erica's sort of talking about what she should put in it when it's done, and he says, don't put anything in it because it will consume you, you know. And I just thought, some of his opinions, the other great thing he said was when he was talking about religion, and he said a line about churches don't really care about people because you never see beds in churches. I know I don't have that quote exactly right, but I thought that was a fascinating way to look at organized religion and what they do versus what they perhaps could do. But there are other great characters as well, like I think you mentioned before, Diana, who's this sort of mildly alcoholic neighbour that, you know, they sort of accidentally have one drink together one night, and she just becomes part of Erica's life and sort of lets herself in and wanders over and they drink together. And I thought she was quite fun. But also Ray, the guy up the road who won't wave, I thought he was... his story was really compelling because even though he's only in it for a short while, his transformation, I think, is much more dramatic than Erica's.
Rachel, did you connect to the other side characters?
Look, I did. I don't think as much as Sean, but I really loved Diana. And I'm sorry, everyone, but occasionally I do underline books if I really adore things in there. But there was a description of... before she's met Diana, the main character, Erica, is walking along the beach and she sees a woman out bobbing out on this grey, slaty sea in a red kayak, paddling strongly, and she's thickly set and she's just looking, and I can't do Amanda Laurie's language justice, but she's looking at one with the waves. And I was just completely struck by this really simple description of this, you know, woman who I really did come to like, actually. Yes, I connected with Diana. But I feel like they kind of felt like they were off to the side. I mean, very much for me, the book is about Erica and her journey, and these characters are there just to take it a bit further to help Erica take those extra, you know, extra few steps towards building the labyrinth.
Mm. And John, what did you think of Amanda Laurie's writing and imagery?
Yeah, I have to say, I do think she's a really impressive writer, and I love reading books that are in the first person because I don't do that as often as perhaps I should. You know, I'm constantly reading fantasy or action adventure where it's all third person and it's swapping between different perspectives all the time, you know, to make it more dramatic. But first person novels, I love the way that you can just get that kind of insight and observational, you know, the things that you don't always pick up or you don't even notice that you're picking up, you know, the tiny little movements that can symbolize a whole relationship, you know, the sort of the way that people become comfortable with each other or stand away from each other, or I just love the way that she created those relationships in sometimes without any dialogue at all.
Mm.
There's this funny moment as well, like, you know, exactly that with that first person, and her and Yurko are making tea. He's ended up having to camp in her garden, and they're making tea, and she just comments to herself, it's as if we've been doing this for months, you know. So he's been in camping in the garden for a day or two, but Erica's character noticed that there's such a familiarity, and you really get these insights. I completely see that, yeah.
Yeah, I love that moment as well, yeah.
Janie in Hawthorne says she loves the idea of a book club, but why such a sad, creepy book? Is that a fair description?
It kind of is, Jamie. It kind of is.
That must be the Tasmanian influence. I don't know what it's cold down there, you know.
I've just put another log on the fire. There is transcendence in this. You know, there is. I feel like it's a kind of a spiritual journey. Like that's not writ large either. Like it's not a book with an overt spirituality to it. But I think Amanda Laurie does this quite well. Like her last, I think it was her last book. Can't remember the full title, but it does have Richard Klein in it. It's about this fairly pedestrian middle-aged man who all of a sudden gets awoken and gets kind of turned on by an Indian spiritual guru. You know, so a very prosaic character who has this transcendental, can I say the word, experience. So I think that there is that that journey, for want of a better description, in this book, and there's lightness too. There is lightness.
I'm sure.
Yeah, you touched on the spiritual aspect, and I think you said you didn't think it was very religious, but I thought it was extremely religious. I loved that those parallel sort of intersecting lines between the spirituality and art, and madness and obsession. I thought they all overlapped the entire way through. And one of the things that really struck me, I don't know what you thought of this, Rachel, but the husband's name was Gabriel Priest, which I thought was this fantastic, bombastic name that I thought would have been better suited to like a cult leader or an international rock star or something. But yeah, I don't know. No, well, I was just going to mention as well all the constant references to Chartres Cathedral near Paris. But I just thought that was all fascinating.
Yeah, and I mean, while I think that Gabriel Priest could be like a kind of a clanger of symbolism, really, that doesn't chime harmoniously on my ears. I do think that there is a spirituality to it,
and so
unfinished, I thought.
Yes, unfinished, because one of the other points I think Sean you felt is that Daniel's madness isn't very clear what that was.
Yeah, I think I was about 20 pages in when I started to get elements of Lionel Shriver's We Need to Talk About Kevin, but I didn't think this was anywhere near as developed, I suppose is the word. I just kept waiting to hear how Daniel had gone from the obsessive artist to, like, the mute kind of withdrawn, almost insane creature that he's depicted as in prison. I didn't quite get the translation there.
Mm. Did it work for you, Rachel?
Look, I agree with Sean here. Like, Daniel's character, I think, is best understood in comparison, or being as being a son, because it's through the eyes of his mother that we see him. But he is, like, there's something profoundly wrong with him, and yet Erica still sits with him in prison as he sits and sulks and spits on the image of the labyrinth that she's bought to show him. It's interesting because, I mean, we're so aware of, I would hope to think that we're so aware of mental illness these days that it's, if we have a diagnosis, it's somehow easier to accept, or it can be. And I'm not sure whether I'm bringing that filter to this book as well, but it feels like there's something about Daniel that is unanswered, and not in a good way for me as a reader either.
Okay, well, let's cut to the chase. Should we read this book, Sean?
Look, I think it was an interesting journey. I don't hate the choice, but no, I don't think everyone needs to read this. I mean, it was a bit slow for me, you know. It was the sort of thing that maybe could have been done in 50 pages.
Rachel, that's a bit harsh.
Oh, look, I would say completely spend the time with it. There's this lovely notion, and I don't know how you say it, it's K-A-R-I-O-S, Karios. It's a Greek notion, and it kind of fits in with this idea that you could, yes, completely you could do that book in that story in 50 pages, but this is a notion of timeliness or timelessness, and it's described as the moment where you're weaving and the loom is between the weft and the weave, and you know that it will go on to make the stitch, but it's that moment. And I think that it goes at the pace that it has to go at. And I think not everyone is going to love it at all, but it is beautiful. It's observed so well. And it makes my heart hurt a little bit as well, which I think is quite a profound effect. Like, books don't often make me feel that much, but it did have that effect on me.
All right. Okay. Well, I think you've convinced me. I think I'm going to read it. Okay. Our next Nightlife Book Club is on the show is Friday, September the 18th. And the title you guys have selected for us is what?
It's The Hunted by Gabriel Bergmoser. I think I've won this coin toss fair and square. It's my turn.
Right. And just give us a little... quick.
Do we get points, Indira, for if we get you to read it based on our reviews? So The Hunted is by another Australian author. Gabriel Bergmoser is an award-winning Melbourne-based author and playwright. I haven't read his young adult novel, but apparently it's very good, and I'm looking forward to listening to some of his plays and audio plays because, of course, we can't go to theatres at the moment. But The Hunted itself seems to be this kind of Mad Max, Wolf Creek kind of fast-paced, high-octane book about a small town that I gather goes to war with this kind of invading gang of some kind. I haven't read it yet, of course, but I'm really excited.
All right, look forward to seeing what you guys think. So that's on the show Friday, September the 18th. But thanks so much for our first Nightlife Book Club book, Sean Guy, who's up in Darwin, and Rachel Edwards for sharing their views. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Indira. Thanks, Sean.
Well, that was our first Nightlife Book Club book, Labyrinth by Amanda Laurie. You can see that both our reviewers came down on either side of to read or not to read. And you can find all the details of our book club books on the Nightlife website.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.